Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, December 18th. Let's start with an article from the front page. Lake Decatur, Pier 36 Marina. On the grid. Workers installing 120 new boat parking spots among four floating docks. We have several photos of Bo Baldock of G&H Marine working to install new docks at Pier 36 Marina on Lake Decatur on Monday. The docks are filling the space between the beach house and the Lake Patrol building that had been home to various boat club docks over the years. Also a photo of Brett Beck and Adam Moreland of G&H Marine installing the new docks. When the project is complete, there will be 120 new boat parking spots spread among four new floating docks. The new addition will complement docks added before the start of the 2024 boating season, bringing the total to 260. Jeremy Garner of G&H Marine said a few docks are available for rent. And finally, a photo of G&H Marine dropping anchors to install the boat slips for the new docks at Lake Decatur's Pier 36 Marina. Another local story from Brendan Moore, Decatur. City raises its game in D.C. and Springfield. Council okays lobbying firm that has ties to Trump and power brokers. The city has upped its presence in Washington, D.C. and Springfield by hiring a high-powered lobbying firm with ties to President-elect Donald Trump and power brokers on Capitol Hill and in the state capitol. The Decatur City Council unanimously approved a two-year, $8,333 per month contract with Mercury Public Affairs, adding to the city's portfolio of lobbyists to push the city's legislative agenda and fight to bring more state and federal dollars back to Soy City. City Manager Tim Gleason, who serves on several national boards and organizations related to his position, told council members that the firm could tell Decatur's story with the powerful and influential at higher levels of government in a way that city employees simply could not. "This is something where you have to have a professional in place," Gleason said. "The staff, even if we did have the capacity or the bandwidth to take this on ourselves, we do not have the relationships. And it is critical to have those kinds of relationships open those doors with our federal delegation, navigate the different departments out in D.C., and then also work with our state representative partners as well." The firm has more than 20 offices across the country, including in Washington, D.C., Chicago, and Springfield. Its Illinois operation is headed by former U.S. Rep. Sherry Bustos, a Democrat who represented Northwestern Illinois in Congress from 2013 to 2023. Bustos, along with her son, Nick Bustos, who is a senior vice president with the firm, and Michael Morthland, also a senior vice president as well as a Decatur native, attended Monday's council meeting. Bustos, a city council member in East Moline prior to her election to Congress, said she understood the desire of Decatur officials to maximize the city's return on investment. She said her own connections, including with Decatur's Congresswoman Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat of Springfield, and her former colleagues who chair powerful House committees, would be useful. And where she doesn't have a direct connection, she said there was likely someone else at Mercury who does. "The firm is bipartisan, which would serve to benefit the city in what will be a closely divided but Republican-controlled federal government and a Democratic-dominated state government. And the firm will have a direct connection to the White House. Trump's incoming chief of staff, Susie Wiles, was a Mercury co-chair until last month. I like to say that there's not a door that we can't open," Bustos said. "We're a well-established firm," she added. "We know our way around Washington, D.C. In Illinois, we know our way around Springfield very well also." The organization has built up its Springfield connections in recent years, opening an office in Illinois' capital city and hiring experienced statehouse hands such as Nick Bustos, former state senator Toy Hutchinson, Democratic political consultant Zach Kutsky, and James Hartman, the former chief counsel to Illinois House Speaker Chris Welch. Morthland, who served in Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration and was an assistant counsel to House Speaker Chris Welch, is the son of Decatur City Attorney Wendy Morthland. Some of Mercury's clients include Ameren, Illinois State University, the Illinois Corn Growers Association, the Illinois Soybean Growers Association, the City of East Moline, and the City of Rock Island, according to state and federal lobbying disclosures databases. The firm also represents Chinese company Goshen, which is constructing an electric vehicle battery plant in Mentino, and One Earth Sequestrian LLC, which is seeking to build a 7-mile carbon sequestration pipeline from One Earth Energy's ethanol plant in Gibson City to storage wells in McLean County. Decatur has long deployed lobbyists to get its priorities in front of decision makers in state and the federal government. Since 2016, the city and Macon County have split the cost of a $60,000 per year contract with transportation lobbyist Ann Schneider, whom city officials have credited for helping secure funds needed for major projects like the Brush College Road grade separation. Since 2022, the city has retained former Illinois Environmental Protection Agency Director Lisa Bonnet on a $36,000 per year contract to consult on its long-term initiative to reduce siltation in Lake Decatur. And for nearly a decade prior to 20, the city contracted with former Democratic State Representative Julie Curry for $30,000 per year for state government lobbying services. Gleason said that Mercury will be retained in addition to those already under contract, not a replacement for. The firm's contract begins January 1st and runs through the end of 2026. In other news, the council vote to approve a development agreement with restaurant Pool Hall Sticks on 3645 U.S. Route 36 that will grant the business a video gaming license. Per the agreement, the owners of Sticks on 36 must invest at least $250,000 into the building, hold at least 50 amateur pool tournaments per year, and increase dining capacity by 50% within 12 months, among other conditions, in exchange for the video gaming license. The council voted 6-0-1, with Councilman David Horn abstaining. The relatively easy passage came despite ongoing concerns about the proliferation of video gaming. Efforts have been made in recent years to rein in the activity, which had been a boon for local bar and restaurant owners as well as city and state officials' coffers. But it has also led to the creation of parlors centered around the activity, not as a complement to bars and restaurants as intended. I'm going to vote for this tonight, but I am concerned that we're opening a little bit of a floodgate, said Councilman Chuck Cool. Gleason said the agreement was important because it captured the uniqueness of the business. He said it could serve as the template for what may come in front of the council in the future. It's the first development agreement of its kind inked since the council amended the city's liquor code in October. That change required a development agreement in place before a video gaming license is issued. The council also unanimously approved a resolution changing the zoning of the former Temple B'nai Abraham Synagogue at 1326 West Eldorado Street from B1 to a planned development district. The building's owners, Byron and Jody Suey, are seeking to renovate the building for use as a private event space, such as for weddings, receptions, and fundraisers. The renovations will happen in phases, and at least at the beginning, events will be limited to fewer than 100 people. Another development agreement that would authorize a sales tax rebate for KC Fines, an overstock and discount retailer that opened earlier this year in the former Ace Hardware space at 2809 North Main Street, was pulled from the agenda. A reason was not immediately given. Under the proposed agreement, the city would rebate 90% of the sales taxes collected for the first 3 years, 75% in the fourth year, and 50% in the fifth year. These would help the developers recover some of the $275,000 building remodel costs that were incurred. Continuing with local and state news, Macon County CASA adopts Heartland CASA as new name, from Donette Becker in Decatur. Macon County Court-appointed Special Advocates has changed its name to reflect the expansion of its service region. The group is now Heartland CASA, CASA, and has grown to provide support for children in foster care who are going through the court systems in Christian and Moultrie counties. It already served Macon and DeWitt counties. The decision to rebrand as Heartland CASA reflects the organization's commitment to a more extensive area of service and highlights its dedication to being a consistent source of hope and advocacy throughout the region, a news release said. By expanding our services into Christian and Moultrie counties, we are embracing the opportunity to bring our advocacy to even more children and families, said Blaine Smith, Executive Director of Heartland CASA. We believe that every child deserves a voice, and this expansion allows us to reach more children who need our help, creating a brighter future for them. Again from Donette Beckett in Decatur. Crime of the week, Decatur police seek suspects in burglaries. The Decatur Police Department needs the public's help in solving a string of burglaries this week's Crime of the Week. According to a news release, the property located at 815 East Kenwood, that houses industrial space for various businesses, has been the target of multiple burglaries in recent weeks. Surveillance footage has captured the suspect in two separate incidents, the release said. Images of the suspects are available on the Macon County Crime Stoppers website under the Crime of the Week tab. Anyone with information on these burglaries should call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-TIPS, T-I-P-S. You don't have to give your name. Cash rewards of $500 are paid for information leading to an arrest. You can see a photograph of the suspect in the in-print version as well. In today's food section, B6, we have recipes for holiday roast, a standing rib roast with potatoes, horseradish cream sauce. We also have a recipe for brownie cookies with dried cherries and white chocolate chips. Also a red wine au jus to go with your roast beef, and a roast beef seasoning rub to enhance the flavor of the roast. Is today your birthday, Wednesday, December 18th? If so, the stars say you are a leader and others respect you. You're idealistic, playful, and sometimes stubborn. This has been a fun, loving year for you. However, you are headed into a year of work, building, and construction, both externally and internally. Simplicity will be the key. The stars show the kind of day you will have. Today in history, on December 18, 2019, the U.S. House impeached President Donald Trump on two charges, sending his case to the Senate for trial. The articles of impeachment accused him of abusing the power of the presidency to investigate rival Joe Biden ahead of the 2020 election and then obstructing Congress's investigation. It was the first of two Trump impeachment trials that would end in acquittal by the Senate. Also on this date, in 1865, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, abolishing slavery, was declared in effect by Secretary of State William H. Seward. In 1892, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky's ballet The Nutcracker publicly premiered in St. Petersburg, Russia. Although now considered a classic, it received a generally negative reception from critics. In 1917, Congress passed the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, prohibiting the manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors, and sent it to the states for ratification. It was repealed in 1933 by the 21st Amendment. In 1957, the Shippingport Atomic Power Station in Pennsylvania, the first nuclear facility to generate electricity in the United States, went online. It was taken out of service in 1982. In 2011, the last convoy of heavily armed U.S. troops left Iraq, crossing into Kuwait in darkness in the final moments of a nearly nine-year war. In 2022, Argentina beat France 4-2, in a penalty shootout to claim a third World Cup, the first for star Lionel Messi. Now from our opinion page, part one, fueling the future. Get real, coal, oil, and gas are here to stay. From Ryan Yonk. Yonk is a research fellow at the Independent Institute and a senior research fellow and director of educational programs at the American Institute for Economic Research. He wrote this article for InsideSources.com. The debate over fossil fuels has produced a narrative that is long on rhetoric and short on realism. Those who argue for a complete transition from coal, natural gas, and oil ask us to do what John Lennon suggested. Imagine. Imagine the world they want and not engage with the world as it is. But producing enough energy to meet our needs and balancing this against environmental concerns requires far more than just imagination. The reality is the types of renewable energy that advocates usually have in mind, solar and wind power, hydroelectric power, bioenergy, tidal and wave energy, can't do what fossil fuels do, now or in the near future. Fossil fuels are here to stay, and policy should reflect that. Since the 1970s, transitioning away from fossil fuels has been a significant goal of environmental groups and their allies. According to Department of Energy data, after 50 years of rhetoric and many trillions of dollars in taxpayer subsidies and private investment, renewables produced 21% of U.S. electricity and 9% of U.S. energy last year. A much-needed reality check shows instead that 83% of U.S. energy and 60% of electricity came from fossil fuels in 2023. These numbers should give pause to anyone suggesting that the transition from fossil fuels to wind, solar, geothermal, and biomass will be quick, easy, or affordable. Instead, we still rely on fossil fuels for nearly all our daily activities, lighting, heating, and cooling our homes and businesses, traveling by car or plane, delivering produce and manufactured goods, and growing crops. Proponents of renewables will look at those numbers and ask you to imagine all the ways we could transition and how much better the world would be if we did. But a study by researchers at Baylor University found that the policy goals now advocated are unrealistic. Their work suggests no feasible way to transition completely or even significantly to renewables because current alternative energy sources cannot reliably meet demand. And absent large government subsidies, renewables are more costly. Consumers expect that when they flip a switch, the lights will come on every time. Fossil fuels are more reliable because they can produce energy day and night when the wind is howling and when it's calm, when the river's waters are rushing toward their destination, and during long dry spells when it barely flows. In contrast, the wind and sun, which account for most renewable energy, produce no energy when the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine. This leaves supporters with a problem. They must either suggest that we build costly grid-sized facilities for battery storage to compensate for downtimes, or that we add natural gas generators to the mix, which requires fossil fuels. These backup requirements also increase cost. For example, researchers at the University of Chicago estimated in 2019 that electricity prices had risen as much as 17% because of the mandatory inclusion of renewable energy, costing consumers more than $125.2 billion more than they would have paid had they stayed with fossil fuels. Fossil fuels store energy efficiently and produce energy independent of weather. For more than 150 years, they have demonstrated their reliability and affordability. Renewable energy today does neither. One form of green energy that could fill this need is nuclear power, but that remains unacceptable to many in the environmental movement, which wants to continue subsidizing wind and solar power. Instead of imagining what we want the world to be, we should look at the world as it is. We should allow the usual process of consumer demand, entrepreneurial innovation, and an assessment of costs to give us the energy we need. On our Life page, A10, we have a gift guide for kids' literature with recommendations on 15 books to inspire the young readers in your life. For preschool, we have I Like Your Chutzpah and Other Yiddish Words You'll Like by Susie Altman. Sweet, funny, and infinitely readable, this board book contains 12 Yiddish words and their meanings, each accompanied by a simple, colorful illustration that will inspire fun reading. Recommended ages 1 to 3, $9.99. Early elementary, Proper Badger Would Never. Written by Lauren Glatley, illustrated by Rob Sayee. Badger was determined to be a perfectly proper guest at his first party, but his instincts may have gotten the better of him. This texture-rich picture book leans into joyful chaos. Recommended ages 4 to 8, 1899. Late elementary and middle school, The Wild Robot by Peter Brown. Roz the robot is the sole survivor of a shipment gone overboard and has to adapt to the wild. She becomes the de facto mother of Brightbill the gosling, and the forest animals begin to form a community around her. Short chapters are punctuated by black and white illustrations. A theatrical adaptation was made this year. Special edition features full color inserts from the movie. Recommended ages 8 to 12, $8.99. And a choice for middle school, Plain Jane and the Mermaid, written and illustrated by Vera Brosgall. Jane has a week to get married and get her dowry before she'll lose her home. Peter might have accepted Jane's proposal if he hadn't been kidnapped by a mermaid. This full-color graphic novel challenges gender roles and beauty standards through an underwater adventure full of snark and hilarity. Recommended ages 10 to 14, $14.99. For more recommendations on books for these varied age ranges, please see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review, page A10. On our money page, A8, we have Prime Personal Finance Estate Planning in 7 Steps from Christine Benz, Morningstar. Estate planning is one of those tasks that makes almost any other job look appealing, no matter how lowly. The good news is that you've probably already done a little bit of estate planning, you just may not be aware of it. It's helpful to think of estate planning as a process rather than something that's one and done and begins and ends in an attorney's office. Here are the key steps to take. 1. Find a qualified attorney. Start by asking other financial professionals who work with you, whether a financial advisor or an accountant, for recommendations. If you have a specific situation that is likely to affect your estate plan, for example, if you're a small business owner or if you have a child with special needs, be sure to ask for referrals to attorneys who are well-versed in those areas. Before you select an attorney, it's perfectly reasonable to conduct a basic informational interview. As you speak with a prospective estate planning attorney, also weigh the intangibles. Do you like this person and would you be comfortable supplying him or her with personal information about your finances and family situation? 2. Take stock of your assets. Spend time enumerating your assets and their value, your investment accounts as well as life insurance, personal assets such as your home, and your share of any businesses that you own. You should also gather current information about any outstanding debts. Your estate planning attorney is likely to provide you with a worksheet to document your assets and liabilities, but it's helpful to collect this information in advance. You'll need people to fill the following key roles. Note that the same individual can fill more than one role. Executor, a person who gathers all of your assets and makes sure they are distributed as spelled out in your will. Many people call upon family members to serve as executors, but it's also possible, and in some cases desirable, to hire a professional. Durable or financial power of attorney. This is a document that grants an individual the legal authority to make financial decisions on your behalf if you should become unable to manage your own financial affairs. Power of attorney for health care. This is a document that specifies whom you entrust with making health care decisions on your behalf if you are unable to make them on your own. Guardian. A person who would look after your children if you and your spouse were to die when your children are minors. 4. Know the key documents you need. At a minimum, you should ask your attorney to draft the following. Last will and testament. A legal document that tells everyone, including your heirs, how you would like your assets distributed after you're gone. Living will. A document that tells your loved ones and your health care providers how you would like to be cared for if you become terminally ill. 5. Manage your documents. Once your estate planning documents are drafted, destroy any older versions of them. Keep the documents in a safe place, either in a home safe, in the top drawer of a secure file cabinet in your home, or in a safe deposit box. Notify your executor of the whereabouts of your estate planning documents, and provide copies of the relevant documents to your executor, agents for power of attorney, and the guardian for your children. 6. Don't neglect the softer side. This may include considerations like, if you end up needing long-term care, would you rather receive that care at home, provided you could afford it? If, in the unlikely scenario, your guardians have to care for your minor children, what are the key values you'd like them to impart to your kids? 7. Keep your plan current. Plan to notify your estate planning attorney and possibly revise your documents if you experience any of the following: change in marital or family status, for example, marriage, divorce, birth, or adoption of child; major change in assets, either sale or purchase; major change in financial status, death or ill health of one of your beneficiaries; and finally, death or ill health of executor, power of attorneys, or guardian. Christine Benz is the Director of Personal Finance and Retirement Planning at Morningstar. Now from our Nation and World page, from the Associated Press, Claire Rush in Portland, Oregon. Googly eyes on Oregon sculptures go viral. Googly eyes have been appearing on sculptures around the central Oregon city of Bend, delighting many residents and sparking a viral sensation covered wildly by news outlets and featured on a popular late-night talk show. On social media, the city shared photos of googly eyes on installations in the middle of roundabouts that make up its so-called roundabout art route. One photo shows googly eyes placed on a sculpture of two deer, while another shows them attached to a sphere. It wasn't yet known who put them on the sculptures. While the googly eyes placed on the various art pieces around town might give you a chuckle, it costs money to remove them with care not to damage the art, the city said in its posts. The Facebook post received hundreds of comments, with many users saying they liked the googly eyes. My daughter and I went past the Flaming Chicken today and shared the biggest laugh, one user said, using a nickname for the Phoenix Rising sculpture. We love the googly eyes. This town is getting to be so stuffy. Let's have some fun. Another Facebook user wrote, I think the googly eyes on the deer specifically are a great look, and they should stay that way. Others said the city should focus on addressing more important issues such as homelessness instead of spending time and money on removing the googly eyes. Over the years, the city's sculptures were adorned with other seasonal decorations, including Santa hats, wreaths, sleighs. The city doesn't remove those and views the googly eyes differently because of the adhesive used, Ben's communications director, Renee Mitchell, told the Associated Press. We really encourage our community to engage with the art and have fun, she said. We just need to make sure that we can protect it and that it doesn't get damaged. The post and its comments were covered by news outlets and even made it on a segment of CBS's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. The city regrets that its post was misunderstood, Mitchell said. There was no intent to be heavy-handed, and we certainly understand how that was taken, she said. We own this large collection of public art and really want to bring awareness to the community that applying adhesives does harm the art. So as stewards of the collection, we wanted to share that on social media. The city so far spent $1,500 on removing googly eyes from 7 of the 8 sculptures affected, Mitchell said, and started treating some of the art pieces, which are made of different types of metal, such as bronze and steel. For some, the googly eyes, like the holiday decorations, provide a welcome boost of seasonal cheer. I look forward to seeing the creativity of whoever it is that decorates the roundabouts during the holidays, one social media commenter said. Brings a smile to everyone to see silliness. Thursday, tomorrow's forecast, mostly sunny, wind south 7 to 14 miles an hour, with a high of 40 and a low of 27. Friday, colder, wind northwest 10 to 20 miles an hour, high of 33 and low of 25. Saturday, partly sunny and chilly, wind east-northeast 4 to 8 miles an hour, high of 32 and a low of 21. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday the 18th. Please stay tuned.